Mark Kermode's in Cannes, and we, parish notices first of all, Mark, this is from Alan, says, thank you BBC and Mark for being available in an MP3 format, which is available as from today. Alan says, I listen live when I can, but I'm sometimes broadcasting on another radio station, which is intriguing.
Really?
Anyway, at last I'll be able to sit in a cinema and say to my partner, Mark Kermode thinks this is rubbish too. Oh yes, she'll say. Then I pass her the headphones and she can hear the stream of invective herself. Oh joy.
Isn't technology a wonderful thing?
Absolutely, yeah, and I'm sure you won't understand it, but from today you can have it downloaded onto your MP3 player. All MP3s will work, but you've probably got a white one with the shiny bit on the back. All details on the website. This from Barry says, Simon, I can't wait. Will it be a grade one rant coming up? How long will it last? The suspense is building. This from Ray. Simon, I'm going to miss Mr. Kermode's scathing review of Revenge of the Sith, as I'll be at the cinema watching it. So just tell just tell him he's wrong. Yes, exactly. Download it. You've got absolutely no excuse to miss it. This from Brian. I thoroughly enjoy the Friday film segment of your program, which I sort of like inverted criticism anyway with the rest of the program. The hype for this week's reviews has been greater than normal, so I've been looking forward to Mark's review of this year's most anticipated movie that is filled with broad, generic and dark comic book characters. So, is Frank Miller's Sin City any good? We'll get to that. We'll get to that a little later on.
On the subject of Frank, can I just say that in honour of Kabir's slip, I'm going to insist on being called Frank from now on. You know why he called me Frank, of course, don't you?
It's because of Frank Kermode.
Because of Frank Kermode. And I would just like to say for the record that much as it is widely believed that I am related to Frank Kermode, I'm not in any way related to Frank Kermode, and I'm sure Frank Kermode would be horrified by the idea that I was, so just to put that to bed.
We have a very good kind of Darth Vader helmet. Here, which
a very good Darth Vader helmet.
Which
is a contradiction in terms, but as you were
for 5-year-olds and upwards. I was modelling it earlier. It did fit on my head. When you press buttons, it does. This isn't gonna, anyway. When you press buttons, it does things like this.
Your powers are weak. Don't make me destroy you.
That kind of thing, and also. Okay, we will do that. Okay, you can start. We'll get a. Right. We're going to be doing that and giving that away for the best Star Wars review. The one that's in the lead at the moment. We'll do the top 10 in just a second. This is our favourite Star Wars review. Came in via text from Ian. It goes like this. A teenager gets all moody for no particular reason, which results in a green midget and a beardy bloke hiding and the aforementioned teenager getting a new hat. Now that is in pole position at the moment. If you can beat that on a Star Wars review, mayo@bbc.co.uk 85058. Top 10 box office this week, which is about to change, obviously. But anyway, this week at 10, The Seed of Chucky.
Which is sadly nothing like as good as Bride of Chucky, which was, and I'm not being funny about this, Bride of Chucky really was a marvellous film. John Waters said it was the best film of 1998, and it was. Seed of Chucky actually has John Waters in it, and it's got loads of bad taste jokes, and Jennifer Tilly's in it, and I love Jennifer Tilly, and I really wanted it to be something special.
A good woman
but sadly,
at nine.
It isn't.
A good woman at nine. You know, I'm trying to make as much time as possible for later on.
Nothing to write home about.
The Jacket at 8.
I liked it very much. I'm really surprised by how miserable everyone's been about it. I thought it was very fine. I thought Adrian Brody was very good in the title role. It is basically Jacob's Ladder in the title role, in the guy who is in the thing which is in the title. I thought that it was a cross between Jacob's Ladder and 12 Monkeys, but those are movies that I love, and it's also a little bit like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Go and see it and make it a hit, as opposed to, you know, The Interpreter, which it's much better than that.
The Amityville Horror at 7.
If you need to see The Amityville Horror, go and hire the original on DVD or buy the original on DVD. There's really no reason to humour Michael Bay by paying money, because all that will happen is if you pay money to go and see The Amityville Horror, he'll do it again. He'll remake something like The Entity, and you don't want that on your conscience.
The Wedding Date at 6.
You know, excrementally bad, and if only they could dig a very big hole and bury the negatives in it, the whole world would be a better place.
XXX², The Next Level.
Ice Cube is clearly too portly for the central role, but he's only doing it once, and you say that apparently Vin Diesel is coming back, although I can't see how he can, because he's killed off, at least in the dialogue terms, in the beginning. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a load of fast cars and Ice Cube.
The Interpreter at 4.
You know, I just don't get it with The Interpreter. Why is it that The Jacket is not doing well and The Interpreter is? I mean, the only... It's a perfectly fine, silly exploitation thriller pretending to be some kind of, you know, postgraduate intellectual thing about the United Nations. And it's not. It is what it is. And there's an awful lot of acting. And acting... acting, when people look like they're acting, when Sean Penn looks like he's acting and Nicole Kidman looks like she's acting, is a bit annoying. And believe me, I've been at Cannes all week. I've seen a lot of acting this week.
Hitchhikers at 3?
Well, apparently everyone loves it. I know what my reservations are, and my reservations are that if you loved the original, if you loved the books, if you loved the town, if you loved the radio series, there are things missing from the film. But clearly, audiences, and I suspect largely audiences who are not huge fans of the original, have taken it to their heart, because number 3 is a perfectly respectable position. It went straight in at number 1 a couple of weeks ago, so it's a hit, and good for them for making it a hit.
Monster-in-Law at 2.
You know, it's a shame that after all this time, this is what Jane Fonda had to come back to. It's rubbish. It's complete rubbish from beginning to end. It's not totally without laughs. I did laugh on 3 occasions. So it's not actually as terrible as it could be. But it is fairly pant.
UK box office number 1, Kingdom of Heaven.
And again, it's a failure. It's an admirable failure. It's interesting that it's gone to number 1 in the box office. I kind of suspected that it would falter earlier than that. There are things to see in it, as there are with all Ridley Scott movies, because he is a very fine director and a much better storyteller than people give him credit for. But centrally, it has a big hole in the role of Orlando Bloom. And I think, oddly enough, there's a comparison with that and the forthcoming Star Wars movie, which is that you need characters who can carry the drama. And Orlando Bloom can't, and I don't think that Hayden Christensen can either.
It's from David in Leeds. Says, I love listening to Mark, whose unashamed manic obsession fest with film provides the highlight of the week's listening. Planet Kermode is indeed a fascinating place to visit every Friday, and strangely comforting in that I realise I am not, in fact, the most eccentric person in the world. I am, however, deeply concerned that due to the combination of A, Cannes, and B, that film, this week's reviews should be cancelled on health and safety grounds, and the Kermode sent to an all-day B-movie horror festival at a seaside of his choice instead to prevent him being tipped into a permanent psychotic state of rage, anger and fear. However, in the event that this does not happen and the Kermode is compelled to A, watch and B, review that film, you may wish to know that I am organising a sweepstake on which various words and phrases are, such as pathetic, rubbish, and ought to be slapped, as to which one of those will be uttered first, as well as giving odds on the use of certain other words and phrases of Anglo-Saxon derivation which are not normally associated with daytime broadcasting.
Well, on the subject of B-movies, and one of the things that really has made it tolerable out here is that I went to see this really nasty little Australian horror film called Wolf Creek, which has got about 50 minutes of interesting plot setup and then 40 minutes of really extreme unpleasant sadism, which I enjoyed hugely. It was 8:30 in the morning and I thought, great, I know where I am, a really nasty Australian horror film to get your teeth into, and that really has kept me going.
Now, the thing is, I'm in a quandary here because we've got a minute and a half to the news. Shall we amble through some emailed reviews so that then, I don't know how long you need for yours.
Well, what we could do is we could play a clip before the news and then review after.
Okay. So let me do a couple of these. Then you can tee it up and we'll play the clip and then we can get into the meat and drink, shall we?
Okay.
This from Bob, who says, this is my Star Wars review. With too little heart and too much reliance on special effects, my review of Sith is best left to Darth Vader when he said, and I quote, "Don't be too proud of this technical terror you've constructed." Tom in Bristol, Star Wars 3, it's shallow, it's dark, it's daft. My 4-year-old says it rocks. All the review you need. Dave Meldrum says, Simon and Mark, episode 3, a little like Blade Runner, only rubbish. What do you think? That's quite
a line. There is a line in Star Wars in which one of the characters says, "This is terrible," and I think perhaps that should be... Anyway, as you were.
This from John Lines, who's in Taunton. This is from a 6-year-old. He says simply, "It's not as good as SpongeBob SquarePants." That's from Alex.
God bless the youth of today.
And I think that sums it up nicely. Do you want to set it up? We'll play the clip and then we'll see where we go from there, man.
Okay, Star Wars Episode 3, the 6th film, but due to the cyclical production structure, this is Episode 3, and if you haven't got there so far, it's the one that bridges the gap between Attack of the Clones and Star Wars A New Hope, which, as we all remember, is Star Wars 4, not Star Wars 1, and it's the one which covers Anakin Skywalker's conversion to the dark side and the birth of Luke and his sister, who obviously romped through the galaxy in the 70s and 80s. Shall we hear the clip beforehand?
Why not, sir?
Okay, so in this clip, basically, it's what always happens in George Lucas films. People, in this case, Ewan McGregor and Samuel Jackson, stand around and explain the plot.
Anakin did not take to his new assignment with much enthusiasm.
It's very dangerous putting them together. I don't think the boy can handle it.
I don't trust him.
With all due respect, Master, is he not the Chosen One? Is he not to destroy the Sith and bring balance to the Force?
So the prophecy says.
A prophecy that misread could have been.
He will not let me down. He never has.
I hope right you are.
Go on then.
Well, are we going to go to the news?
Yeah, I think we probably better. I think we should do before
time for the news. It is.
I don't know. Did you see before you left the country to go to the south of France? I don't know if you saw the first review which appeared in the Times. The headline of which was "Back to the start. We are wasted our time. We did.
We have." Yes.
So I think that's pretty good. Anyway, so we'll find out precisely. You're going to have to hang on for this then. Mark reviews Star Wars 3 in just a few moments' time. We give a prize of this speaking Darth Vader helmet to our favourite review, whether it's good or whether it's bad or, frankly, can't be bothered. Mayo at bbc.co.uk, 85058331.
Irish Open Golf, they're both 4 under par, having completed their second rounds. Darren Clark is among a group of players on 3 under, with Colin Montgomery a further shot behind.
And Eleanor has a question about Mystic River, Mark. I'm just trying to help out. What's the question?
Yeah, Mark, rather sadly, rather belatedly, my husband and I sat down and watched Mystic River last night for the first time. A film that you enjoyed, or yes or no?
Yeah, it was good. It wasn't quite as good as everybody thought it was. I mean, all the sort of critics really wrote. I thought there were good things about it. It was slightly overwrought, and I thought the sort of Shakespearean ending was pushing a point. But yes, it was fine.
Yeah, there's a bit of Lady Macbeth in there, I thought. But
there's a lot of Lady Macbeth, yeah.
The liquor store owner, we reckoned, was played by Eli Wallach, who, of course, is in The Good, the Bad and the Ugly with Clint Eastwood, hence the link. But he wasn't credited in the closing titles.
Well, I cut off the top of my head. I
can, because I just
remember.
Found it on the Internet Movie Database. Mr. Looney, the liquor store
Mr.
owner,
Looney, Mr.
Eli
Looney.
Wallach, brackets
Eli
uncredited.
Well, Simon,
is he not? Is he really not credited?
He's not credited, no.
Huh, how bizarre.
Anyway,
I can't think why, but there we go.
It's all delaying the moment, Alan.
I'm sorry for all those stuff.
We do have a competition, by the way, to give away a pair of tickets to the premiere of Sin City at Certificate 18 on Monday the 23rd at Empire Leicester Square. It includes travel and overnight accommodation, but it will have to wait because, first of all, we have a Star Wars movie to review. Mark, we've heard the clip. We kind of know what the story. Light the blue paper, and I'll just pop out for a bit.
All right, so look, firstly, to be completely fair about this, this ought to be the best of the prequels, and it is the best of the prequels. That's not admittedly saying an awful amount, considering that Phantom Menace was one of the worst films ever made, ever. And Attack of the Clones was better than Phantom Menace, but so is, you know, slamming your hand in the car door. It's really not such a big thing to say it's one of the best of the prequels. It is the best of the prequels, but simply by dint of the other ones being really bad. Now, what we have here is potentially a story which ought to be compared with Empire Strikes Back, because Empire Strikes Back, as everyone knows, is the best of the Star Wars movies, and, you know, crucially is not directed by George Lucas, but it's the one which has, you know, dark subject matter, actually has some kind of thematic substance, actually looks like the plot is going somewhere. And in terms of the creation of Darth Vader, it's interesting that they've kept this back to last, because presumably this is the point at which it's all going to come together, and we're going to understand the dark side, and we're going to understand the weird mystic balance of the Force, and all the loose ends are going to be tied up. Sadly, a couple of problems. Firstly, George Lucas could not direct Traffic. George Lucas, like Christopher Columbus, Chris Columbus, the director, as opposed to Christopher Columbus, the man who discovered America.
Yeah, we got that bit.
Thank you. Is an accountant. He's a bean counter. He's somebody who has absolutely no cinematic understanding whatsoever. If you look back at the one film which people of his which people respect, which is American Graffiti. American Graffiti is not well directed. It's very well edited, and it's got a very good choice of a jukebox soundtrack. But the actual direction is completely lumpen. In fact, the best director on the set of that movie was, of course, Ron Howard, who later went on to direct things like, you know, The Lightness of Splash and The Great Tension of Apollo 13. George Lucas cannot direct. Moreover, he cannot write. His writing skills are, you know, not even preschool. There are at least 3 occasions in Star Wars 3, Revenge of the Sith, in which characters say, "We must move quickly." And you sit there thinking, well, in your own time, George, if you want to move quickly, that would be absolutely fine, because I've been here for 2 hours and 20 minutes, and I am really waiting for something to start happening. What you get is the central character played by Hayden Christensen, who is, with the best will in the world, a pretty boy. He doesn't have a great dramatic weight, who is meant to come to realize a great guilty loss, a terrible thing's going to happen to him, and so awful is it that he turns over to the dark side. Well, as he goes from being Anakin Skywalker to being Darth Vader, there's a moment when Ewan McGregor walks in and says, I cannot believe that Anakin has killed younglings. And you think, you can't believe it. I've been here for 2 hours and I've seen no evidence of it at all. How on earth did this happen? So, firstly, loads and loads of dogfights, starships, boom, all the stuff that we saw before. Although, sadly, since George has now completely pigged out on CGI, you can barely see what's going on screen. I mean, somebody really needs to take his computer away from him and say, George, if you can't do it with plasticine and egg cups, then you can't do it. Because you really have no control over the computer. You need to stop doing that. All the acting sequences consist of actors looking at each other and walking around in circles. Now, clearly, this is because George has taken on board the criticism that his movies consist of people sitting down and talking to each other. So now people stand up and talk to each other, and they circle round and round and round each other incessantly whilst saying we must move quickly, but incidentally not doing so. The lightsaber battles. I mean, you know, we had double-ended lightsabers before. Now we've got a machine that's got four lightsabers, and yet they are directed by people who do not understand the laws of physics or gravity or indeed good drama. Because there are so many ends to tie up, George finds it impossible to ever give us one fight. We have to have three fights intercut in a way which is just absolutely infuriating, because you cannot at any point develop any dramatic tension, because he keeps trying to tie up the other thread. So firstly, from that point of view, just as on a technical piece of storytelling, it's badly written, it's rottenly directed, it is acted by people whose woodenness is, you know, it's like chewing the edge of a table. It's not their fault, because I think Ewan McGregor is a fine actor, and I think he's doing a fine impression of a finer actor before him. But the fact is, it is impossible to deliver those lines in anything other than that kind of fashion. Now, at least the originals had a sort of pantomime campness to them, and they had a brio, and they had a verve, and there is something in them. I was never a Star Wars fan. I mean, I'll be completely frank about it, but at least there was something in the first Star Wars movie that actually blossomed in the second Star Wars movie, because George said, hey, you know, I can't direct. I'm not going to direct this. It's better if I just sit behind and count the box office, because that's what I do really well. So now you get this movie which takes 2 hours attempting to do a fairly simple transition. It's not that hard. The transition is he's a good guy to whom a bad thing makes him turn to the... I mean, it's really not... But somehow he manages to muff it. He manages to muff it on every single level. So that there's stuff, the screen is full of stuff, and people talk about stuff all the time, but nothing actually happens. Oddly enough, in the middle of it all, we have Ian McDermott doing Chancellor Palpatine, who is doing a Hammer horror performance of a bad, wicked, evil, you know, creature. And he's actually rather good. And he's on screen for about 15, 20 minutes. And every minute he's on screen, I think, okay, I can deal with this. Because what we have here is the good old cartoon pantomime villain. But for the rest of it, it's just living proof of a franchise run out of control. It also serves nobody, because the destruction of Anakin, both his soul and his body, is too graphic for the younglings. And the rest of the movie is too infantile for anybody over the age of 7. So, as before, Lucas has betrayed the fans who made him famous in the first place by making the Star Wars movies a hit. He's aimed the movie at neither a young nor an old audience. He's demonstrated for the umpty-thrumptieth time that if you put him behind a camera, you will get something that looks like a bad television soap opera, except completely overrun by mad computer graphics. And he has created a 2-hour, 20-minute bore fest, of which 17 and a half minutes are quite good. But it is still, by a long way, the best of the prequels. Well done, George.
On the other hand, Jar Jar Binks only hit for 2 seconds.
He doesn't say anything.
Exactly. I actually thought I had a terrific time. But you see, I think you care too much. Or you're probably just too angry to enjoy ever a George Lucas movie. Because I take all those points, because there is some absolutely excruciating dialogue and some extremely wooden acting. But just for the romp of having the story completed, and I don't care. You know, I don't care that there are enormous holes, particularly, and I don't care that the acting is pretty wooden and all that. It's just a great ride.
The thing is, there aren't enormous holes, and that's the problem. I mean, basically, the movie is putty. It's a filler. It's a thing that joins up, that completes the circle. It joins Attack of the Clones to the beginning of Star Wars. And incidentally, let's just get this right. He did not intend Star Wars as Episode 4 when he first released it. That's an afterthought. I know he keeps talking about it like, I always had it. No, you didn't, George. You thought Star Wars was a romp. You never thought you'd end up making 6 movies. You never thought anyone would employ you again. I mean, Brian De Palma, when he saw the first cut of Star Wars, allegedly said, well done, George, you've made the worst movie of all time, and he wasn't that far off the, you know, off the ball. But the problem is, nothing is left undone. Nothing is left untied. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking, oh God, she's got to get pregnant, and she's got to go, and he's got to turn to the dark
side. Did you not find the last 10 minutes where they cut the saber duels with the birthing sequence? I thought that was rather well done, actually.
No, all I thought was, you know, yeah, George, you saw The Godfather, I saw The Godfather. You know what? The Godfather was made by somebody who at exactly the same time as you was having their career started off, and look what happened to him. He went on to make Apocalypse Now, and you went on to make this. What happened?
Gary in Muswell Hill says, Mark, can you explain...
No, probably not.
Why, if double-ended lightsabers, presumably an improvement on the single-ended variety, but they appear in a prequel... Surely it's having aerial duels between fighter jets in a film about World War I and biplanes in a film about World War II.
But also, can you explain why it is that Yoda can do backflips in the prequels, but in the movies, he's a hand puppet who has to sit still? Well, yeah, I can explain it. It's because somebody invented CGI between George's original pantomime romp. And then, but I'm sure George has got some completely bogus, pseudo-religious explanation.
It doesn't matter.
And the worst thing is he's threatened to go back and remake the originals. Imagine the one thing that he did that was kind of basically half all right, which is the first Star Wars movie. No, let the pompous old fart go back and destroy it now with his computer graphics and boring voiceovers. I mean, somebody has to stop him. It's not even cinema. The film's here at Cannes. It's been screened here at Cannes, and there've been stormtroopers running up and down the Croisette. And it's been, what is that doing at Cannes? It's not even a film. It's a computer game on a big screen, and it's boring. And at least it's over. Please, it's over.
Lee and Croydon. I went to see Revenge of the Sith last night. I have to say I was pleasantly surprised. It started quickly and kept up the pace throughout. Lucas showed his skill with special effects, and the whole thing felt more like the Star Wars of old. There weren't even that many cringe-worthy script moments, although the worst was Anakin, you look beautiful. Padme, that's because I love you. Anakin, no, it's because I love you. That was particularly awful. And it is
we
the most static
quickly.
And wooden. Exactly, yes. So loads more like that. Went to see it last night. Thought it was easily the best of the prequels. More emotion than I expected. No doubt, Mark, your film cynic will find a myriad of faults with it. But would he at least admit that Hayden Christensen's acting was far, far better than the last film suggested it would be?
Well, Hayden Christensen's acting in the previous film was absolutely dire. And in this, it's just miserably inept. So I think from absolute desire to miserably inept is, you know, yeah, but I think that what you should do is get Hayden Christensen and that guy who stars Orlando Bloom and get them together and get them to, like, remake Goodfellas with two blandest pretty boy stars around.
This Darth Vader helmet for our best review. Okay, that's enough. Thank you. We have a competition to give away a pair of tickets as well to the premiere of Sin City. It's an 18 certificate.
It really is an 18 certificate.
Is it a cartoon, though?
No, it's not a cartoon. It's live action with a cartoon sensibility because it's co-directed by Frank Miller and Robert Rodriguez. And believe me, it is an 18 certificate film.
Okay, anyway, it includes travel and it does have overnight accommodation. And Mark will set the question.
The film stars, one of the stars, and it has several stars. One of them is Mickey Rourke, who you remember is a friend of the show because he was on very recently. And so the question is, what was the name, or more precisely, the nickname? What was the nickname of Mickey Rourke's character in Diner, in which Mickey Rourke first came to our attention as, at that point, a really brilliant actor?
I have to say, just because someone's been on the program doesn't make them a friend, necessarily.
Well, he writes to me, you know.
Mickey Rourke was called what in the Diner? And we will take emails and calls?
Yeah, but it's his nickname that we want. It's the name that everyone refers to him as. It's not his actual name, it's his nickname.
All right. mayo@bbc.co.uk, 0500 993 993 11 to 4. And every week, Mark Kermode's movie reviews available as an MP3 download. David Marlowe in Manchester said, I saw episode 3 twice yesterday, welcomed by stormtroopers at the 6:15 performance. I found the film visually stunning, bar perhaps the final saber fight, and emotionally deeply moving. The fulfillment of Anakin's destiny... is the very definition of Shakespearean tragedy. That is not to compare his beauty of language, but the universal truth that we are all burdened by the inadequacies, whatever they may be, of our nature and soul. I laughed at R2-D2, cowered at the Chancellor, and smiled with glee when spotting the Millennium Falcon. But it is the truth within the characters that makes the narrative work. Thank you, George. Says David
Marlowe. Can I just say that very erudite review demonstrates to me exactly what I've always held, which is that the real genius of Star Wars is in the mind of the fans. It's not on the screen. I mean, everything that you've said in that review is what I would like to have seen in the film. I know, and is what I think is absent from the film. I mean, the only thing I would mock is the dialogue isn't Shakespearean. I mean, not Shakespearean, it's not even Yellow Pages. It's barely English.
The reason why it's terrific, Mark, is that there are no other films that I can think of that will be out this year where, as the lights go down, everyone there will applaud. And that's fantastic. That's an experience. And people stood up and applauded at the end of it as well. So,
I mean, I could say that there are many things that people applaud that are not. I mean, I'll give you an example. For example, something out this week, Notre Musique, which is the movie by Jean-Luc Godard, which opened. It was in Cannes last year, and I thought it was just the most insufferable piece of old arty hogwash. And of course, because it was the man himself, everyone went, "Oh yes, marvellous! It's a brilliant film in which Jean-Luc discusses the nature of the world in the light of Bosnia and art and war and yeah." And it was absolute twaddle from beginning to end, and I fell asleep, and I woke up, and I fell asleep again. It was still going on. In the end, it got a standing ovation. Why? Because it was at Cannes, and it's Jean-Luc. So we all have to say, "Oh, Jean-Luc, yes, you have made them." No, Jean-Luc, stop making films. You're too old, and you're boring even me. And in fact, actually, it's a nice double bill with that and Star Wars. But of course, that's taken a year to open. That's opening now. I mean, it stank a year ago. It still stinks now. But, you know, I noticed that it's Film of the Week in The Guardian. So clearly, some people out there still think there's something worthy about it. It was rubbish.
Jason Mayer, the new Star Wars film is the worst science fiction movie of all time. Imagine morons from outer space, add a few million dollars and remove the scene where Mel Smith sneezes. I'd rather watch Dave Lee Travis play Macbeth. Neil Edwards says, "Simon, just a quick message. I went to see Revenge of the Sith last night. I thought it was fantastic. Really bridged the two trilogies well. My girlfriend hated it, but hey." And this says, "For 30-somethings like me, Episode 3 was the best cinematic experience ever. It answered all the questions we've had for nigh on 30 years with all the loose ends tied up. It had everything."
Hang on.
It had everything I expected and some things I did not expect, like snappy dialogue. It also had scenes with real emotion. Shock, says Nick on that text. Yes, now you can.
How did it answer those questions? The key question in this whole Star Wars backstory that George keeps pontificating about is how it is that Anakin, who is the father of these, you know, good angels who actually, you know, occupy the universe of the first Star Wars movies, how he goes to the dark side and becomes Darth Vader. That's not answered at all. What happens is he has a bit of a bad dream worrying that something's going to happen to Princess Dingy Bong, and the next thing you know, he's putting a bucket on his head and, you know, going and talking like James Earl Jones. I mean, I'm sorry, that's not, you know, in Shakespeare, when characters like, you know, Macbeth or Othello, when they go over to the dark side, it's not just some, you know, 5-minute little whimsy. It's actually about the character being destroyed. There is nothing in Revenge of the Sith that explains the transition from good to bad. It's not beyond good and evil. It's just rubbish.
So remember, Marcus, is going to be up to you as to which your favourite review is from a listener. Remember the one the teenager gets all moody for no particular reason in the lead at the moment.
I think that is so far the outstanding review. Although the one that you just read out that I disagree with, the very erudite one, I have to say I think that was a very good review, and that may even get the swing.
Okay, it's down to you. This is from Callum in Glasgow. "Stoic charisma vacuum becomes vindictive emphysema sufferer while a beardy bloke discusses trade rules with an aging grammatically deficient gremlin."
Yeah, and again, trade rules is exactly the thing. It's like, you know, it all comes down to tax, doesn't it? That's what it comes down to. And, you know, tell me that Lucas isn't an accountant, but in fact, the whole Star Wars saga is about tax wars.
Pierce Ryan says, "Revenge of the Sith is better than the other prequels, but then again, so would a big screen version of Changing Rooms. If you like exactly your Yoda's green and the Force dark, you'll find a lot to like. Otherwise, it's about as enjoyable as cleaning up the shower after Chewbacca." Is there, look, there's 4 minutes, the yes. Printer has collapsed with exhaustion right. with reviews, because we have to anoint the winner fairly shortly. Is there anything else which, you know, is worth a candle, really, this week?
Very quickly, do we have got time for a quick clip of What the Bleep Do We Know? Let's have a quick clip of What the Bleep Do We Know, which is a documentary, a sort of drama documentary, about which Madonna has said, "I found What the Bleep Do We Know to be incredibly thought-provoking and inspiring. Here's a taste."
"What I thought was unreal now, for me, seems in some ways to be more real than what I think to be real, which seems now more to be unreal."
"You can't explain it. Anybody who spends too much time trying to explain it is likely to get lost forever down the rabbit hole of mysteriousness."
"I create my own reality. It may sound like a tremendous bombastic claim by some new agey without any understanding of physics whatsoever, But really, quantum physics is telling us that.
And it's a really, really odd thing, What the Bleep Do We Know, because it's a documentary about quantum physics that has within it a sort of dramatized section starring Marley Matlin, in which whilst all these people talk about quantum physics and the fact that when you get down to a molecular level, nothing exists other than what we think about existing, Marley Matlin is a photographer who's having a bit of a bad time, and she meets a kid playing basketball in a park, and he then explains to her about quantum physics, and then she goes to a wedding party and she gets off with somebody, or she doesn't, but she thinks she does, and she takes a photograph, and it turns out in the end that we're all in control of our own destinies, and if we can only imagine a more positive future, it will come around. I mean, fine. I wonder, if we can only imagine a more positive future, why it is that they didn't imagine a better film, because it seems to me that the argument, the thing is, whatever you imagine is true. Well, then imagine a better film. It's not terrible. It's not awful. It's fairly annoying, and it does give an awful lot of opportunity for people in sort of big flowing robes to pontificate in manners that is rather, you know, it's like all that Kabbalah stuff. It's all just a load of old hogwash, but it's just about entertaining for about 30 minutes, but sadly it's an hour and a half long, and Madonna thinks it's one of the, you know, most thought-provoking and inspiring movies she's ever seen, which I think tells you more about Madonna than it does about the movie itself.
Our Sin City question was,
what was the name or the nickname of the character that Mickey Rourke played in Diner? Not The Diner, Diner.
And the answer was Boogie. And congratulations to Susan Bannister in Bolton, who was won that prize. We'll be in touch, but you get to go to the premiere, and there's overnight accommodation in a hotel which hasn't got nylon sheets, which is an improvement. So we should decide which our favourite review, or you, Mark, should decide.
Well,
which was your favourite?
The very first review that you read out about Boy Gets Stroppy and blah, blah, I thought was absolutely brilliant and made me laugh. But I think that in terms of actually the only honest way of doing this is to give the prize to somebody who demonstrates that they understand and love and are inspired by Star Wars, because in the end, it belongs to the fans. So I can't remember the name of the person who wrote it in, but that long review that I said, you know, that was, and he talks about okay, admittedly, it's not Shakespearean dialogue, but he thought it was a marvelous thing, and he understood it, filled in all the gaps. And that, for me, I think, was the winning review. I completely disagree with it, but as you all know, it comes down to anyone's personal opinion.
David Marlowe
Although
in Manchester.
I'm right.
Of course, David Marlowe in Manchester sent that in, and
he wins
the rather wonderful mask which makes these kind of noises. Hey, Mark, movie of the week then?
Movie of the week, I would say it's not going to the cinema. It's not going to the cinema.
Say it, it's the revenge of the
cinema. No, it's not. It's stay at home.
Mark, I'll see you next week. Have a good weekend.